To the IXP orientation session of EIX. Our agenda today, this afternoon, is some research work, request for information from Thomas Mosak from NICCZ on SLAs and pricing at IXPs. Then the last call for the switching wish list, Mike Hughes. We really want to get the list closed off so we can have a new version to go and beat up on vendors with. Followed by EuroIX update from Serge, and then AMZIX membership survey, some feedback from the AMZIX. Brief announcement from the NCC about routing registry courses, and then the presentation from Korean Internet Exchange. Can I also pass around the white sheets? And if you didn't sign them earlier, please sign them and pass them on. So without more ado, Thomas?
So hello, everybody. It's just information for you that I start some research for European price cost at internet exchanges, and I also at cost of transit connectivity, GPRS availability, and price for the domain. So this research I would like to finish up to end of this year, and it will be public for everybody who wants to have it. So a couple of people already sent me some information. I have maybe one third of all information, so I'm working on it, and maybe I will ask someone to help and find me your price cost or something like this. So hopefully for 100% sure for the next RIKE meeting we'll be ready, but I would like to finish it by the end of this year, and this research is also maybe will be useful for you for your comparison, your price and your situation and your country. Original idea was that right now, as it was at Josef's presentation, we are now looking how to set up the best price for the 10 gig access. So it was the idea, and I also at Parallel are doing some top-level domain business, and there was some request to prepare some list of the domains, cost of the domains at each .au country. So I just make or develop this research more complex. So that's it.
Thank you, Thomas. Any questions or... Yeah. What's a good way to reach you, Thomas?
By the end of this year.
Sorry?
DM at nix.cz.
Okay, thank you. Okay, switching wish list. Serge, are you ready to go? Mike just wants to finish. Serge, do we have a Serge in the building?
I have no slides for this, but basically we do want to do the final thing. I've got some feedback from Keith, from Daniel Arena, some of our own stuff that we found. One of the things that Keith mentioned earlier was this unidirectional problem and UDLD. I think that needs to go on the wish list of things, so whether UDLD, LFN, whatever, some sort of link status detection and notification and way of actually taking these ports down when they grow screwy on you. That is on the list. The things that Keith added, I'll run through them. There's obviously PVLAN stats and counters. I kind of thought along there, well, what about actually getting S-flow into these things as fairly standard? I mean, Foundry are doing it now. I think it's probably worth doing in the longer term. Getting S-flow into this thing, there's the normal sort of broadcast ARP control thing. Now we can actually touch packets a lot more in the newer ASICs. We've been able to do a little bit more in that area. Reading from Keith's list here, talking about ARP filtering actually on the layer 3 information on the IP addresses. Filtering non-ARP broadcast, well, that's really easy and trivial. Let's just filter on EtherType, you know, let's just generalize that as much as possible. Rate limiting of that stuff, we've certainly got some working rate limiting now in Foundry platform. AMZIX are using it now, they're rate limiting and they're unicast and pretty fair amount of other evil stuff. Just realize all these people here on the this side of the room can just hear this voice, this disembodied voice coming out of the speakers. There, you can see me now. Isn't that better? Support from MARP, that's another possibility, because I think it's getting more important with people coming in over pseudo wires, layer 2 things, connecting switches to the IX, to be able to actually identify that that actually it's not our kit that's broken, it's somebody else's. That would be lovely. Where are we? SSH SCP, this is a real common request, and a lot of people don't support it, or what they want is they want an additional license, and they're quite ready to bend you over and extract a lot more money out of you for you know, what is a basic sort of security feature that should just be in the box as standard and should be part of the standard package. Spanning tree and loop protection, so it's the normal sort of alarms, getting things like Cisco we've been doing for a while, BPD, UGuard, RootGuard, all those kind of things. Getting those actually implemented as standard in a lot of other kit would actually help people's choice. Right now, I mean, okay, Cisco might say, don't do this, because that's taking away our competitive advantage and reasons to buy our kit, but actually I would love to have a choice. And I think a lot of other people in this room would like to have a choice. Multicast control and containment, we've already got PIM snooping in some stuff, so let's continue that. One of the things that, talking to Lane Patterson a few weeks ago from Equinix, he said, you know, we've actually got a lot of these features that we've asked for over the years. We've pounded on them, and we've got these things like hitless failover in the box now, and hitless upgradability of code, those kind of things. So where are we going next? What sort of resilience are we going to go next? And there's a lot of talk about 10 gig this morning. People looking at 10 gig, link aggregated circuits, that kind of thing. And I think it's opening a door to a whole bunch of potential new things to watch out for, because a lot of this kit can quite happily go and forward all manner of evil at 10 gig at line rate, and blow up your routers around the edge as well. So, you know, it could be a case of control and containment of various sorts of layer 2 broadcast or flood protocols and broadcast storms. Cable testing for Gigi over copper, so actually be able to do in on the card cable test, so you can actually just put the port into a test mode. The other thing I think I added to that was actually be able to do optical receive power detection actually on the optics. In some cases, this is actually already available in the GBIX, and the code is just not turned on in the switch to be able to do this. And if we could actually get this stuff turned on in the switch and the SFPs or GBIX to report this information upstream to the OS in the box, that would be a great help when we come to debug errors, because, you know, all the time what we see is, oh, well, this is giving off some unusual errors and we don't really know why, and we have to send a guy to site to start fiddling around with it and cleaning fibers and getting testers out. If we could actually, at the remote end, look at this and go, oh, I can see the problem right now. The receive power is way down in, you know, way down in the boots. That's why the link isn't stable. We can save that. We can save some hassle, because when the guy goes out to site, when my tech goes out to site to actually fix the problem, he already knows what he's dealing with before he gets there. He's got a fairly good idea of what kit to take with him, and what to expect at the other end before we actually dispatch somebody. A lot of time, if you've certainly I've found it, is we don't have techs on site all the time at our locations. So if somebody needs to go on to site that's travelling, okay, it's not a long way. We've got an office in London that's fully staffed. But it's 20, 30 minutes, and then, you know, scooting around between site, making sure you're picking the right stuff up. So more of this sort of remote, physical remote diagnostic features in the actual box as well. That was another one of the things I was thinking out as far as a wish of things I'd like to see. I think Force 10 are doing some of this stuff in their box now. Is Josh still here? Yeah. Are Force 10 doing optical power measurement in their on their cards?
No clue.
No clue. Okay, fine. I think last time I looked at them, if they weren't doing it, it was on their roadmap to actually go and do optical power measurement on their cards, so they could actually, you know, check the optical receive power. Yeah. That was pretty much it, unless anybody else has got anything. Oh, colored GVIC support, and preferably not an option to not lock down to a GVIC specifically from a vendor, because that, you know, I think that can limit the support of things like colored GVICs in the future. I mean, it looks like, you know, colored Zenpacks are certainly on the way for 10 gig as well. So that is pretty much it. I mean, the other one potentially was being able to get IPv6 and IPv4 counters different, so basically doing ether-type counters. That would be interesting because it's actually quite easy then to see what sort of amounts of traffic is going through the switch, and then when Bill asks how much IPv6 is going across your exchange, we can say, hey, well, we know because we count on ether-type. This sort of stuff is possible in a lot of the platforms that are shipping now. There's enough flexibility in the code, so I think it's just the case of us going and actually beating on them. So if anybody else has got any more ideas along that sort of area that they'd like to come in with, I think that's worth doing. Keith?
Yeah,
a few more last minute ones.
These are all random.
Okay.
ideas that I've had since sending you that email. Mm-hmm. I hate to say this, but I can see a need for more than 12-bit VLAN tags.
Sorry?
I said greater than 12-bit VLAN tags.
Yeah.
But subject to a proper standard.
I mean, the other thing I came up with was being able to actually do tag swapping on the port.
I thought that was in my list.
I didn't see it.
Certainly Extreme support that in
7.2.
I don't think any of the other vendors. I think maybe Cisco support. I don't think Foundry do.
Mm-hmm. MG8, yeah. I've not looked that deep down into the code on the MG8 recently.
But possibly bigger VLAN tags might be needed as well, given...
You're going to run out of unique tag space, I think, but you know how hard it is to go and beat the vendors around the head to pack them off to the IEEE to do this stuff, though. You've been there, but I think between us we might be able to do it.
Well, we have to keep at it, don't we?
Breaking
the 40-kilometer limit on 10 gig is probably going to be necessary, given some of the fiber runs around various cities, but I think that's in the pipeline.
Quick one. Marconi, you've done it in the labs.
Okay, cool. Being able to change the default MAC address that's used for spanning tree.
Ooh, yeah.
Which is probably a sort of bodge for doing multi-domain spanning tree, but if you're an exchange operator, you could put your spanning tree frames on a different MAC address from the default one. Then that would provide a degree of insulation against these little accidents that tend to happen. Assuming you're running spanning tree in the first place. I mean, I guess the other thing is that EAPS and MRP are all very well, but wouldn't it be nice to have a single standard for protected rings that all vendors complied with, rather than each doing their own flavour of the same thing?
Yeah.
So,
that was one of the things that was in the back of my mind a few weeks ago. I mean, I was looking at EAPS and EAPS behaviour and MRP and MRP behaviour and just in my head, and I was thinking, well, actually, these two are not very dissimilar animals at all. They behave in very similar ways. They use pretty much the same detection methods.
Yep.
And certainly from our experience, MRP with UDLD does work. You know, it does protect the network at least as well, if not maybe even better than RSTP.
Okay, so hopefully you got these.
Yeah. I've got them in my head.
Can we try and get those onto just a simple list?
Yeah.
Because it would be good if we can close this off at the EuroIX forum in about a month's time, and then that will reach a different audience, and if we can close it off a couple of weeks after that, then it's done for another 2 years.
Hopefully.
I mean, that would, else breaks.
That would certainly bear out fruit in terms of where the switch vendors are in terms of roadmap, and the fact, I mean, the other thing that worries me right now is the fact that there's no work going on in the standards bodies, certainly that I'm aware of anything faster than 10 gig. There is no decision whether it's going to be 40 or 100. What a lot of people are saying right now is we'll sell you Ethernet framed inside OC768. So we'll put you Ethernet over SONET effectively. And that may be good enough as a stopgap, but right now, I mean, I was just at lunch with Bill and Bill, and we were talking about, you know, getting things faster than 10 gig. If you can get access to the fiber and all the landers, it's actually cheaper just to go and trunk 10 gig together. In the short term right now, but really, these guys really do need to think about faster pipes. And are faster pipes doable? You know, this is the other thing. Are they electrically and optically doable, or will Moore's law continue to hold true for this stuff, or have we actually fallen off the edge of a cliff or something?
It certainly seems like
Bill,
we...
Could you introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Bill Norton from Equinix. It certainly seems like when you have a number of 10 gig customers exchanging traffic on your switch fabric, you're going to need something substantially bigger than that to be able to handle trunking switches together.
Right, yeah, exactly. Or you've got to design your switch fabric around this stuff by getting all the big boys interconnected in the same switch. So the traffic, there's less traffic leaving the switch. So most people that are on 10 gig are all connected into the same switch. And then it kind of releases some of the pressure that you would need if you had multiple inter-switch links, for example.
Yeah, no, I think the lack of future beyond 10 gig is something that we as exchange operators should always be worried about, because traffic growth isn't going away, and we've always relied on the next magnitude of or order of magnitude capacity increase from Ethernet to get us through that. I mean, there is hope, though. I have seen at least one vendor that's messing with tunable WDM stuff, mm-hmm. Which could be quite cool, but we need more than just one.
Yeah, I mean, that brings the cost down as well if you can just do outboard muxing as well, because that kind of stuff's cheap, relatively anyway. But I mean, do other people? Has anybody else got any more information about what's going on as far as faster than 10 gig E and not sonnet framed Ethernet or not? Because Keith's up again.
Do you want to come here?
What I was going to say is maybe an interesting thing that we can do either in EuroIX or the EIX working group is actually invite all the vendors to come along and give us their presentation about what is beyond 10 gig. And if they all draw a blank, then hopefully by inviting them we're sending a message.
Yeah.
It might be worth doing that, get all four of the main switch vendors in to give us a possibly closed room.
Is that an EOF opportunity, perhaps? Is it a wider EOF possibility? Is it a wider...
Well, I guess that's a good point. It's not just an internet exchange operator issue, is it? I mean, ISPs are going to need more than 10 gig before too long as well. So, yeah, quite possibly.
And I think it's got to be Ethernet, because the cost of an OC768 card is just ridiculous. You know, 1 million, it's just crazy.
So, something to consider.
Keith, it's an interesting idea. I'm thinking back to when we did some of these things at Nanog. We invited some vendors to show us what's on the horizon, show us what's in the next generation sort of stuff. And you run into two specific dangers with that. One is the vendors often don't want to let their competition see what's on their drawing board so they can out-design them. And the second thing you end up getting sometimes are the marketeers who have, beautiful pictures of what they think things should be doing without anything to back them up. So I like the idea, I just haven't seen it executed in a way that would be providing the information I think we both want.
That is possibly, without wanting to exclude people who are in this room, it's possible that they may be prepared to do that to a closed room of EuroIX members one at a time. Rather than an open forum like this. And I mean, I prefer openness, but maybe there's a trade-off there.
To make light of it, we could do it like a game show with soundproof booths with headphones at the back. But no, it's a really valid point. Because if I think back 2000, 2001, there was already stuff happening for 10 gig E. And people were already planning their next ASICs and their next switch fabrics and what their next box would look like. That sort of information, I don't find that as readily forthcoming anymore. Is it that they don't want to tell me because they know I'll come here and tell you guys? Or is it because actually they really haven't got an idea, or they're not really sure, or they're scared of the competition? What is the problem that's holding these guys back? Because it would actually be quite useful if we could help drive this, because at the end of the day, that might translate into a sale for them. I know we're a fairly small niche market, but if enough of us are buying the stuff, then it's worthwhile. Okay, so I'll take that stuff away, and obviously we're going to try and wrap this up at EuroX, as Fergus said.
I'll take this stuff away and I'll bash something out on the mailing list. So if anybody has any further thoughts, my email address is mike@links.net. That's it. Hope you enjoyed the beer last night.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. Okay, next is Serge with a EuroAX update.
Okay. Sorry about my voice. I think I did a little bit too much singing last night. My name is Serge Radovic. I'm from EuroAX. I'm just going to give you a quick update on... Okay, well, firstly, for the people that don't know, EuroAX is the European Internet Exchange Association. We were formed in May 2001 by a group of IXPs that wanted to get together to do two main things. One is to create a web portal for customers looking for an IXP in Europe, and the other one is to exchange information between the IXPs. We currently have 32 members in 21 different countries in Europe. Since the last meeting, RIPE 48, we've taken on TICS in Zurich and PHYSICS Helsinki. Now, I do a combined member IXP traffic. Now, what this is, it's the peak traffic. Obviously, it's not all at the same time, but it's all the peak traffic of the publicly available statistics from the EuroAX members. And it was 160 gig in April, and that's gone now just over 200 gig. I've just written this little bit down here about the fact that that's about a 20% increase if you take away those two members that came on since those numbers were added. And I think most of that traffic has actually come just before and in the last month. Okay, Okay, big news at EuroAX is that we're still keeping our name, but we're thinking of taking on associate membership. So the reason for this is we had expressions of interest from IXPs outside of Europe. And of course, we want to share the information with IXPs in other regions. So as a starter, a first step, we've decided to put forward this proposal. The fees are going to be €2,500. Now, of course, the proposal and the fees have to be agreed upon by the general meeting in Athens in October. If that goes through, then in January next year, we'll hopefully be taking on our first IXPs outside of Europe. If there's any European or non-European, well, the non-European might have to wait till January, but if there's any European IXPs that would like to join EuroAX, you can contact myself or go to the website. Other news, we had considerable costs over the last few years. Probably not so much in money, but in the way of time, of our board having to... Our board is made up of people from six different countries, so there's quite a lot of travelling involved. We always go to a different location for the board meetings. So we've decided to, after about 6 months of testing, take on a Maritech conference tool. We haven't had an official board meeting with it yet, but that's planned quite soon. So that's going to help reduce our travelling. And EuroAX used to have 3/4 of a person working for them up until, well, they still do, actually. And then from the 1st of October next month, they get a full-time person, which is me. So I've gone from part-time to full-time for EuroAX. Our next forum, we have them twice a year, and it brings together all our members to discuss current issues and in the IXP world. Our next one is in Athens, Greece, on the 25th, 26th of October. It is for members only, but if there are any prospective IXPs out there, whether they're from Europe or outside of Europe, they can contact me and I may be able to invite them to the forum. Of course, for our members, the next general meeting, the 7th GM, will be held in conjunction with the forum. It'll be split in two, both on the Monday and the Tuesday. There will be four board positions available, so I'll be sending out a letter of convocation to the members probably by the end of this week, and it'll explain the whole process of the nominations. Are there any questions?
Not a major point, but I'm just curious as to what working definition of Europe you use. is that EU, Council of Europe,
this took me
right
months.
Territory?
I'm going to send out the document next week and you can have a look there. It wasn't easy. No, we based it more on a region, a workable region. Because of the forums, we know where there's difficulty in people sending representatives in certain places, and we want to do it basically on a physical region. It doesn't extend all boundaries of Europe.
Would it be easier to have a map and show it? Have you got one to?
Yeah.
It's a bit.
Yeah, it wasn't based on the right region. It wasn't based on the EU. It was based on my ideas, and it's been quite controversial. But we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I can see some controversy in there.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there will be.
I still think Rockall should have been in there, but
a few people asked me if I'm going to be playing my Kuala Lumpur video, but unfortunately, there's not enough time, and I don't.
Oh, Serge,
there is definitely not enough time, and. I think I publicly humiliated myself enough last night. No more questions? Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Serge. Okay. And Amjix for.
Hello, my name is Cara Massini from M6. My voice is leaving me as well, so sorry about that. We did a member survey this summer, which might be of interest to the IXPs that are here. We did it through a web survey. It was an invite through the mailing lists, and everybody who joined responded to the survey was a member. We had a couple of people responding from the same members, so that means that we had about 50% of our members responding. Most of them were ISPs, but obviously lots of carriers and a couple of the more the newer type of members, like the content providers and ASPs. We asked lots of questions on what are the reasons to connect, how are you using your M6 connection, do you have any other IXP connections, things like that. Do you have private interconnects? So I'll just give you the breakdown of the general items. Reasons for connecting to M6 are mostly linked with the amount of parties, the amount of peers that are there. In line with that finding, cost savings, obviously. The number of peers determines the cost savings you can, in fact, get here. One of the, it's not a surprising finding, but the fact that it's listed as the third finding is the geographical location of Amsterdam, something that's really fixed. So we're happy it's that important to the members. There's a couple of other things that are important to the members. They're mostly like dissatisfiers, meaning that if they're not there, they're important, but if they're there, it's just okay. Basically, an exchange is all about having it there, being stable, and having a good quality of service. Obviously, neutrality and independence is important as well to the members. We asked them what they did expect to find at M6, and later on if that expectation was lived up to. And we found that most members are really quite satisfied with the service. We got lots of keep up the good works, so thanks for the members that are here that gave us those compliments. The fact that the members are satisfied with the service, or even more than satisfied with the service, is obviously a good finding. It also gave us a clear feedback on what is the most important factor, having a lot of peers at your exchange. So, meaning that that's an asset for M6, and that's something that we want to keep on having, obviously. The other assets that are important are the technology, the advanced technology, the quality of service, things like that, and the cost effectiveness, obviously. What's very interesting is we didn't have a lot of general knowledge about the peering profile of our members. We obviously got feedback from individual members, but we never had an overview. So we got feedback back on that. It's about 70% of the traffic of our members, if you can, in fact, generalize for all members. I mean, the respondents are about 50% of the number of members. But if you can generalize, about 70% of the respondents' traffic flows over an internet exchange. About half of that traffic flows over M6. That's about 30% of the actual traffic. There's lots of connections to other exchanges by our members. There's about... Yeah, mentioned. Well, obviously, Lynx was mentioned a lot, D6, but also Equinix, New York IX, and PAX. They're all mentioned a lot. The average number of exchanges that our members connect to is about four. There's a range. I mean, there's lots of ones, and there's a couple of 30, if that's how many exchanges there are. But there are parties that are connected to 30 exchanges, they say. We also asked them about private interconnects, whether they had them or not. Obviously, there are quite a number of private interconnects. We do have a private interconnect service, but it's not used a lot. But it's very good to know that the average number of private interconnects is about three for our members. Obviously, there are lots of parties. Yeah?
That's 70-30. Is that 70-30 by number of members or 70-30 by amount of traffic?
Traffic, yeah. So 100% of the one member... traffic. We also asked them about peering. The actual average number that was given is 109, which is kind of high. We got the feeling that some people gave their number of peering sessions, but that's, yeah. So, but it's a good giving, good number. Peering policies. We asked them about peering policies as well. About 70% of our members has an open peering policy. And lots of people have sort of in between closed and non-public. The thing is, we also asked them about whether they were satisfied with our peering support. We don't actually provide peering support, that is, like peering coordinator and so on. But we do provide just information on peering contacts and like whether it's an open or a closed peering policy. And in fact, the fact that we are giving that information already satisfies the members quite a lot. And the ease of setting up peering negotiations was very much appreciated at M6. We got some other feedback on being an association. It's not like the members visit the meetings a lot, but they do appreciate the fact that we are an association having the meetings. The general meeting is not attended a lot, but the people that are attending are active at those meetings, and they appreciate the meeting, so that's a good finding. Obviously, the technical meeting, there are more technical meetings, but are also visited more. That makes sense, obviously, being a technical environment. And there was a sort of request to have more types of workshops, like the IPv6 Awareness Day we had. The result of that is that we now have about 50 peers at active using IPv6, which is way more than any other exchange, as far as we know. Another one was we asked them about pricing and were they satisfied with the value they got from the exchange. Most people are very much satisfied with the value for money they get from us. But we also got an interesting finding on especially the fast Ethernet pricing, which was said to be out of line with transit pricing, with lots of people connecting more on a layer 2 infrastructure. They look at the trade-off between either a transit locally or having an MPLS or whatever connection to M6 and then buying a fast Ethernet. And the pricing is off there, so we should have a look at that. And we're going to. That was about it. Any questions?
I first want to thank you for sharing this information. This is actually very useful to see how people are measuring their own value to their customer base.
Mm-hmm.
On the slide where you talked about peering policies, I was wondering if you have any rough definitions for what you mean by closed versus open and such.
Yeah, a rough definition. We just listed open, non-disclosed, non-public, and closed. So it's what they chose, really. So what they understand of being non-public is, yeah, so it's not a, we didn't give a definition of the actual open or closed or non-public.
Okay. Just as a piece of information for what I do in the research I do on peering, I found roughly three categories that might be analogous.
Mm-hmm.
Open, by my definition, roughly is we'll peer with anybody.
That's right, yeah.
In any single location. The answer is yes. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. There is another category called selective, which means we will peer with folks generally, but there might be some prerequisites,
yeah.
Like we need a certain amount of traffic, or we need to see you in two locations or something.
Yeah, yeah, indeed, yeah.
And then restrictive is probably what you call closed, which means we won't tell you what we need to peer with you because the answer will probably be no.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, the inclination is not to peer with anybody else.
Yeah. Well, that's about the same, yeah.
Okay. One other thing that jumped out at me was the average number of private interconnects. Based on the European model, I'm wondering, is that for the ISP that you asked, they have a total of 3 private interconnects, or is it in a location where they're specifically co-located to peer?
We didn't ask it that specifically. So we just asked whether they had any private peerings. And there was a huge difference. I mean, the spread of findings was like zero to, well, a lot. I mean, so that's why the average is 3. I mean, there's carriers that have maybe 10, 20 interconnects, private interconnects, and there's ISPs having no private interconnects. So
okay. There's
a lot of difference in the findings there.
3 seemed like a small number to me. That's why it
yeah,
jumped out.
Yeah, well, that's probably because we had a lot of feedback from relatively small parties, but they have large peer because they're used to using the open peering policies. There's a huge amounts of average number of peers, whereas the private interconnects are quite low. So that's why I'm saying I'm not sure that we can generalize this, but at least it's more information than we ever got, so it's great, yeah.
We have a random prize for audience participation, and it goes to Bill.
Thanks for Bill.
There's no guarantee of more prizes.
Okay, any more questions?
Can you go back to the slide where you were asking people what they thought was important about
M6
or about exchanges generally, the things they were looking for and the importance they placed on? That's the one, yeah, that the previous one. This one, yeah. As it strikes me, anything that is above about 10-15% in this one is what's really important.
Yeah.
Everything else is completely by the wayside.
Nobody cares about services. They just want to pay with the most people they can the cheapest way possible.
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
Yeah. I think that's quite interesting because a lot of people talk about services at exchanges and it'd be really nice because there's participants and people that are our customers in here.
Yeah, indeed.
Do you really give a damn about services in exchanges or do you just want to put packets in the bucket and for them to drop out in the right place?
But the feedback we got in the open areas was like, the service is, it's basically, it should be there, it should be always there, there shouldn't be any problems. Mm. So we've had quite a stable environment for quite some time now. I mean, if we'd had problems in the recent times, we'd probably have a quite different finding here.
Yeah.
I guess that they would find the quality of service quite important. If we were discussing something like a Lynx M6 partnership or whatever, probably neutrality and independence would become as more important.
Yeah.
So it's basically a finding of the timing.
It's whatever's in the people's brain at the time. Yeah.
Indeed. And we're probably going to do this regularly, yearly. I'd be interested to know if the findings will be different next year.
I think that's the main thing, to see if there's any changes in the trend, really. Because I think this pretty much guides what a lot of people are looking for out of exchanges, certainly in our community anyway. And if participants on exchanges want to say something different, come and say so.
Could we introduce ourselves, since we seem to be a...
We know him by now, don't we?
No, but it's the people on the broadcast.
Bill Norton again. The other thing, to Mike's point, was that the number of people who actually attend was only 12%, yet they all seem to think that participation or the ability to contribute or control the exchange point ranks so highly. That was also a remarkable distinction. I kind of wonder if they would get more involved if you decided you wanted to go commercial or do something that would affect some of these other things.
Maurice Dean, Global Crossing. What I was looking at there, in this list of important things for members, what I don't see in this slide is the importance of having an association. There was a figure you had before.
Yeah, that's...
Could you just bring that back up?
The one here. We asked them about the expectations and whether whether we lived up to them. Okay. It's another thing from Reasons to Connect.
Okay, it's one of the things that that came up in Bill's meeting last week in New York and for the Equinix group was about the difficulty that some of the non-European networks have when they arrive in Europe and want to connect to exchange points. And one of the things that the difficulty was not understanding why a number of IXPs are associations. And it's just interesting seeing that from this list that being an association wasn't actually one of the important things. So I'm wondering if that gives some interesting questions.
The association, I guess, the neutrality and independence is probably the association alike.
Yeah, although
finding.
I think Equinix is neutral and independent, but as a commercial company.
Yeah.
Just why I raised that as an interesting question.
Just if it helps to address that, the vast majority of exchanges out there are 400 in the world that I know of at this point, are associations. So anything other than an association is the exception case, not the other way around.
Thanks for that.
Christian Pannel, Ljubljana Internet Exchange. Can you tell us which are those 50%? Are those mainly the smaller members or the big guys?
Lots of different. We had about 42% ISPs and 25% carriers. I mean, carriers are mostly the big guys, I guess. The ISPs, if it's 42%, it must be quite some smaller parties as well. Yeah.
Because we found out that the needs and views of the smaller ones are completely different from
That's
the
right.
bigger ones.
Yeah. But we do have quite a lot of the smaller ones. We still have a 10 meg port service, so they are members too. So we should have the feedback from them as well. Okay, if there's no more questions, thank you.
Thank you, Carl. NCC, you're going to give a quick presentation on routing registers training.
It's actually very, very short. The RIPNCC has got a few different trainings. One of those trainings is routing registry course, where we basically try to show people how to keep their entries in the routing registry up to date and how to actually benefit from that using the tools that are available. Other than that, we've also started to talk to some of the exchange points in maybe if they are interested in that, to give short presentations during exchange point meetings on the tools that are available and the RPSL. So if that's interesting to you, then please come to me or to Rumi, who is the training manager at the RIPNCC, and then we can talk about that. And these basically are the places where the routing registries will be, routing registry courses will be held the first half of 2005. There's some other courses also still this year. There's one in Geneva and others I can't think of at the moment. But that's all available on the website. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And any questions on that? Okay. The one outstanding item we've got is the right 48 minutes, which we don't seem to have a copy of. But I will post those to the list, and if anybody wants to make any changes, please can you mail them to us ASAP so that we can get them signed off for the end of the month or something. Okay. Our final item is our overview and future plans for the Korean Internet Exchange. It's the first IX built in Korea in 1996. And Chan Hong Lee?
Nice to meet you. My name is Chang Hong Lee. I'm a senior engineer in National Computerization Agency. And I came from Korea. And National Computerization Agency is the leading government organization for national for Korea implementation, I think. So I present to show the kicks over when peace supply. And from now on, let me introduce the Korea Internet Exchange. Korea Internet Exchange is located in Seoul, Korea. This slide shows the agenda. So it will start with the history of Korea IXs, and I'll present KICS overview and facilities, KICS network and operation, virtually. For your information, I'll show the history of Korea IXs. In 1999 in Korea, all ISPs is connected with NSA hub. As per your information, the blue cloud is showed the commercial ISPs, and the red cloud shows the non-commercial ISPs. But after that, in 1996, as the commercial telecom firms were in charge of the connection of commercial ISPs since 1999. And as you can see, the KICS took role of connection of the non-commercial ISPs. So KPIX, KP is the Korean Dominant Telecom Carrier Enterprise. And the DIX is the DACOM IX. I think that Korea's second carrier internet service provider. And in 1999, there is a King's was established by the Association among non-dominant internet telecom firms. So now Korea has the POIX. I think that KTIX is the most KTIX is the most biggest ISX in Korea, and the Daycom IX is the, I think that's the second, and the KIX is the, has the role of non-commercial ISP connection, and KIX is the other dominant connection of association, I think.
Do you mean now or in 1999?
Excuse me?
Do you mean now or in 1999?
Yeah. This slide shows the KIX overview. This slide shows the KIX center overview. And as you can see, the communication and system room has the 500 square. Communication system room has the given routers and other servers and given switches. And you have the testbed of IPv6. You can see IPv6, the next station room has the role of testbed IPv6. I think that KIX is the government infrastructure, but we have many security facilities. So, as you can see, a CCTV monitor and biometer system. And as you can see, this slide shows the KIX, the history of KIX. KIX is the, I think that the first internet exchange in Korea. It is established in 1995 and built and operated by National Computerization Agency. And KIX is interconnected with commercial ISPs and between commercial ISP and non-commercial ISPs and provide non-commercial internet networks to trend service. So non-commercial internet ISPs Korea has done as follows. I think that PubNet and PubNet Plus was the high-speed government network, and CreoNet is the high-performance computer networks. For example, Korea SuperComputerNet, and CoreN is the Korea Research and Experiment Network. It's the only high-speed testbed in Korea. And the 6KNet is the IPv6-based internet access network. Yeah. And as you can see, Korea is the POIX, KTIX, Daycom-IX, and KIX and 6KIX. 6NGIX is only testbed and operated by National Computerization Agency. And Korean has the many ISPs. I think that the Korea Telecom, Daycom, Hanaro, Drunet, and GNG Networks, and etc. And we have operate and manage overseas internet network. This picture shows the connectivity of KIX. As you can see, KIX is connected with non-commercial internet networks, commercial internet, and IX, Korean IX, and overseas internet. This picture shows the connectivity of KIX in detail. The blue circle shows the commercial ISPs and IX. And the yellow circle shows the research network. And green circle shows the government network. Some of this, and we say that this is the non-commercial networks. Yeah. And we manage the international line. 1.2 gigabps. Maybe total bandwidth of KIX is, I think, that 30 gigabps. This slide shows the MRTG graph of KIX. I think that KIX has the total volume of traffic has the 6 gigabps in peak time. As you can see, The government organization and school people use internet at noon. I think that the 12 and 14 is the as many internet users and connections. And as you can see, this is the weekly traffic graph. Korea Saturday and Sunday traffic graph is the lower than because the Korean government workers don't work and Saturday and Sunday. Now, I'm sure the KICS operation management system. We manage the KICS by using various component system. This picture shows the Korean KICS NNS system. KICS NNS system name is this. NIMS G2. NIMS G2 is the acronym of NCA Internet Management System Generation 2. As you can see, each port group is show the MRTG graph. And we can click this picture, and you'll show the MRTG graph is the showing. Next slide is the KICS traffic analyst monitoring system. This system is developed by using, I think, the Cisco NetFlow. And we can all KICS network monitoring, KICS flow network monitoring by using this system. As you can see, the one line traffic is the HTTP and other EDOM key, and the P2P traffic is CAN monitoring this system. That's nice. Next system is the KICS intrusion detection monitoring system. This system is deployed in international line. So in Korea, the security is the very important thing. So we deployed this system international line because the security is the most important. As you can see, we can monitoring one virus and hacking networks, a network of hacking, and we can monitoring the total traffic and the measures traffic, as you can see. This is the KICS home page. It's very simple. This slide shows the future plan of KICS, and we have a plan in large link windows. Commercial connectivity is enlarged from 19 gigabits to 33 gigabits, and common non-commercial connectivity link is enlarged from 12.8 gigabits to 20 gigabits. And we have a make-up plan to realign relevant regulation. And I come here to know about other IX, so UIX, the technique of UIX, and the policy of UIX. And we want to the international cooperation to build the international region ISP and other IXPs. Thank you. I'm sorry for my broken English. If you have any question, feel free to ask us.
Thank you. Questions? Bill?
Of course, I always ask a question. I think outside of Seoul, we're very confused by what happens inside Seoul sometimes because we don't have very good visibility. We aren't able to see very clearly how things are interconnected, and we don't understand the politics and so forth. Could you perhaps explain a little bit about the interconnection between the different switches in Seoul and the distinctions between KIDC, the DACOM IX, and what's happened with the LG acquisition?
Do you mean KTIX? KTIX and DACOM IX?
No, KIDC, Korea
KIDC is the Korea Internet Data Center.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could we try and use full names? Okay. We don't know all the abbreviations.
Okay, so DACOM is one of the largest non-incumbent. It's the largest non-incumbent phone company. Is that right? Okay. And LG acquired it or acquired KIDC from it or something?
I think the KIDC is operated by Korea Telecom. KIDC is the only IDC.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So the exchange switch fabric in there, you don't regard as an exchange? Is it?
I think that KT, Korea Telecom, has the KIDC has the non-switch public. I think that the other network IDC have KT.
KTIX?
Yeah.
Is that in KIDC now?
No.
No.
Yeah.
So if you look at this graph, there are four IXs in Korea, and KIX deals with the non-commercialized, such as government networks, and there are three commercialized IXs.
Could we use the mic, because this is being broadcast?
There are three non-government IXs that deals the private ISPs, so-called. There's KTIX, DACOM IX, and KNX, which is the association of the many small players. And I guess your question is, you want to know how. I think your question deals with the what goes under this KTIX.
I guess I was curious, first of all, about just making sure that I understand that all four of these organizations are running switch fabrics, and how they're interconnected. Is this one subnet across all four?
Okay.
And I've seen 65 gigs peaks on the KIDC switch, and there's peering happening across that, but that appears is unconnected from these four. Is that?
Okay, the architecture of Korea IX is very special. I think that I see the Europe IX is the most maybe layer two IX. Korea IX has the most IX has the layer 3 IX, exclude Kings. Kings is the layer 2 IX. So KTIX and DACOM IX is maybe connected by using router, not switch power. Thank you, Sam.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, Rob Lister from Lynx. Is this all going via the exchange, or are you managing any private interconnects or private fiber between different organizations that are connected to the ends of these?
Answer is yes. You have the Korea have there is private peering in major carrier ISP. So KTIX and DACOM IX is the linked with very high speed networks. I think maybe that is the bandwidth of maybe 40 gigabps, I think.
So the question was whether what does KIX connects with the other ISPs.
Do you provide a private interconnect service, or is that something that just happens?
KIX, it's still operated by it's still regarded as a government agency, and we only provide ISP service to the, non-commercialized networks. So they connect to KIX to go to the other.
But you don't provide private interconnect between
yeah.
the member
organizations. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, well, thank you all very much for coming along, especially for coming all the way from Korea to talk. That wraps up the meeting for today. We'll hopefully see some of you at EuroIX in a month's time, and the next meeting will be in Stockholm in May, I believe. So thank you again for coming. And could we have the other address, the other name sheet? Brilliant. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.